Thanks to everyone who was involved in the first post. I actually wrote the thing in just about 4 hours, start to finish, in a single sitting, because this has all been bottled up inside of me for a very long time, and I guess it finally just all came pouring out all at once. I think that, I'm actually genuinely afraid that, as scary as everything in this post was, it's just the foundation for something much bigger and weirder. Something that covers stretches of time you couldn't possibly have imagined and has consequences that may have already spread beyond my little hometown. So I'm telling you this up front because the first post was easy. It was just an absolutely insane, impossible childhood memory, and the equally impossible night years later. I wasn't trying to put anything together, connect any dots. Dots connected themselves. See, I just happened to be there. This next part's work. I decided I'm going to go back to my hometown, my childhood home, and confront my parents about that day when I was 9. When I first saw the columns, I have so many questions about that day. Questions that have lingered just below my conscious thoughts every day since then. And despite seeming to get a few answers that night, last Thanksgiving, most of what I discovered, or at least think I've discovered, is honestly just open up more questions. Both in general and about that day from my childhood. I could just call them and ask, but my parents were so evasive that day. I've been so silent about it in the years since, and I genuinely don't trust them to give me any full, honest answers. It'd just be a lot easier to tell me if they were withholding information if I'm there in person looking them in the eyes. I need to know what my parents know. Especially what my dad knows. I need to know what he did that day, why he was wearing that absolutely bizarre outfit that was almost otherworldly in its inability to be described in any rational way. I need to know what was in that special suitcase he took to work with him. I need to know what that work consisted of. And after what I found underground last Thanksgiving, the bones, the obvious sight of not just one, but several sacrifices, maybe even mass sacrifices at the end of that platform or altar or whatever it was, I need to know if my father was involved in the disappearances of his children that day when I was 9 and the subsequent disappearance last year when the columns returned. Which brings me to another uncomfortable thing I need to confront. So I need to understand more about whatever the hell it is that is under my town. See, being down there, it was so clear at the time that whatever it was alive. Somehow, and impossible as that seems, right now, far away from it, in the daylight, with no gigantic oppressive garden of towering concrete columns blocking out the sun, the notion of that seems absolutely ludicrous. I have no idea what it was, but I've never heard of anything like that. Not in actual biology or even cryptozoology I've been looking into ever since. There are barely any parallels in fiction that would seem to fit whatever the hell was down there, all those countless steps deep in the depths of the earth. Maybe some Lovecraft, but even then, there isn't much in the way of similarities as far as I can tell, at least. I'm so desperate. I'm looking into mythologies from around the world for anything. Any basis that I can work from. I'm getting off track. The point is that chamber, that giant, impossible hollow, somewhere God knows how deep below my town, was being lit from below. Oh, I think it was being lit. Like I said in the post, whatever was coming through those cracks in the adobe floor allowed me to see, but I couldn't be sure if it was actually light. Couldn't be sure about pretty much anything that happened down there, including how much time passed while I was there. When I got back topside, it was clear that it had been maybe a few hours max, but down there it felt different. Time felt very different. And I have vague memories, almost just a collection of still images and indistinct feelings suggest I was down there much, much longer than that. Point is, I don't feel like I can really trust my memories of that experience, but the one thing I'm most confident of is that when I shine my flashlight down on that horrifically tall, unwieldy tower of bones that move from the relatively recent at the top to what appeared to be positively ancient near the bottom. My light struck that adobe floor. And I'm more positive about this than anything else I saw or experienced down there. The contact of the light with the floor is what threw its lazy, organic, rhythmic undulations into tense spasms that sent columns of adobe earth crashing the concrete ceiling of the chamber, and eventually produced the columns above ground that could be seen looming over every inch of town the next day. I did that. Whatever that thing down there was, whatever those columns were, I woke it up. And that's the most troubling thing of all. I know I'm responsible for them appearing the day after Thanksgiving last year, and it doesn't take a genius to make the connection that both times the columns have appeared, children in the town have gone missing, and with them, the columns. The columns were gone within a day of me stirring them as well. According to the girl's aunt, 7-year-old Tiffany Carter, Tiffany's mom, had refused to talk to the press or any family outside of those who live in town with her. It was denied that the girl was missing. Local police investigated and made the determination that Tiffany's mother was correct. The report of her disappearance was unfounded, but her aunt has been persistent. She's talked to anyone who'd listen, told them that no one in the family has seen the girl for almost a year now, and that the mother and the police are lying. I don't know if that's true. But I saw enough that night last year to know something was very wrong, very evil, very, very secretive was going on here, enough so that it at least seems somewhat plausible that Tiffany's aunt could be correct. And if that's the case, if this child disappeared, and if the disappearance has something to do with the columns, and I'm the only one who caused the columns to rise over the town in the first place that day, then I am, at least to some extent, responsible for whatever may have happened to Tiffany Carter. And that thought kills me. Even so, I live silently with that guilt for almost a year now. And it finally became too much. I wrote that first post to at least begin to get the story out there, selfishly, try to soothe my guilty conscience. But the process of going back through those memories, some of which I've repressed for quite a long time, awoke a deep desire within me to find answers, and some of you expressed a similar desire, which is good, because I'm determined to get them. For Tiffany, for all of you. And selfishly, again, for myself. I haven't had the opportunity to go back home yet. But in the meantime, I've been following up on another line of inquiry that I'd actually started before posting the first entry. So a friend of mine from college, Jeremy, was a history major, and eventually he went to get a PhD and now teaches it at a school a few hours away from my town. He knows the area and its history pretty well, and incidentally is one of the friends who initially dragged me onto their urban explorations of abandoned places that eventually led me to be so brazen to break into the old municipal building. He's practically responsible for planting the seed that eventually sprouted into that night last Thanksgiving. Well, I got in touch with him about a week ago. I mean, we reminisced a bit about college, you know, and about the abandoned places we explored, and I explicitly told him that one of my favorite things about the excursions was discovering the histories of the places that we explored, piecing together their stories, gathering new understanding of them. I told him that I'd explored a few places in my hometown, although I did leave out what I found in the basement of the municipal building and everything below it. And I hinted that I would really appreciate knowing more about the story of my town and the land it was settled on. The kind of odd and strange things that wouldn't be in the town museum or a generic book about the area. Sorts of things that his research experience and knowledge of what kind of sources produce interesting results might turn up. And so the morning I made that first post, he got back to me. Left me a voicemail saying that he'd found something weird in the records of an indigenous tribe who lived near the area that the town now rests on today. I thought that was an oddly specific thing to stress, particularly in a short voicemail. The tribe explicitly did not live where my town is today, only nearby. So, I mean, I called him. I actually recorded the call to make sure that I didn't miss anything, and so I didn't have to take notes. I could instead be free to focus on whatever he had to tell me. Meaning, gone back, I've transcribed the conversation. Beginning at the relevant points. I mean, I did redact every use of my town's name because this is obviously a dangerous situation. People have gone missing. Don't want to do anything that might encourage others to put themselves in any kind of danger. I mean, I'm already caught in this. I don't want to drag anyone else down with me. So in your message, you said that you found something weird in some native records?
I mean, I wouldn't call them weird. People who eventually settled didn't exactly get along well with the indigenous people in the area.
Then didn't get along well? Like how?
They were fundamentalists. Violent fundamentalists. They did some bad things to people they found who weren't, white or Christian. Like, massacre level bad.
Fuck. That bad?
Yeah, like bizarre mass lynchings. I mean, things I'd never heard of before.
But not in the area where they settled.
Yeah, okay, so that actually seems to be why they chose the location of the town. Because no tribes or other groups lived there, or even got very close to there. They definitely felt the people were more holy, or that the word was intact, than other places. And I assume that's because there weren't other people carrying out what they considered to be a blasphemy on the land. I don't know for sure, though. The records on the reason for the town being founded, they aren't pretty clear. I mean, what I found was actually from a group that lived about 200 miles southwest of where the town stands today, which, I mean, is a pretty long ways away, especially for the 1800s, but it seems like the closest group recorded in any historical documents.
Okay. But wait. Why aren't there any records?
What I found on the town?
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Okay, well... I just mean it's not like... The formal work of a historian, or even an anthropologist or sociologist, some oral histories, interviews really, taken from some missionaries who were trying to convert the tribe at the time, and their church, look, they preserved the interviews. I mean, it's not vetted. There's really nothing to prove that the interviews even happened, let alone that their contents are true, other than the existence of the interview transcripts themselves. I mean, hell, it could even be completely invented by the missionaries. Either it's proof that they're doing their job when they were getting busy, drunk, in some bar hundreds of miles away from where they're supposed to be, or even manufactured as proof that the tribe was in dire need of the church's guidance. I mean, possibly in hopes of receiving more manpower or funding to continue their work. These things aren't even online. I had to go to the university's library, borrow the documents from the church to get my hands on them. I didn't even ask how long that took to pinpoint. I mean, this one document is this tiny-ass church.
So it could just be complete bullshit.
Oh, complete. Total bullshit. Especially considering I can't find anything to substantiate what the person being interviewed says. Like, at all. Nothing.
Then why even bother with it?
I mean, because it's weird as fuck. I mean, even weirder than the details about the lynchings that your founders did. And even if it's not true, it's pretty wild of a story about the land when you grew up, you know? It reminds me of breaking into places with you and Rachel and Eric and making up our own stories of why the abandoned places were like that. Even if they weren't true. Even if we were completely off base. They're still fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so nostalgia then.
yeah, nostalgia. I guess.
Okay, so what is it?
Okay, well, the missionary talked to a group of these tribe elders, trying to get a sense of where the tribe fit in amongst the other Great Plains tribes. So they asked the elders to recount the tribe's history. It was all pretty standard. Their people had been on that land. I mean, the land they were on at the time of the interview, not the land where the town is today, because, to be clear, records show they never got closer than a couple hundred miles to the area. So on that land, for thousands of years, living as most people indigenous to the area did. Small communities that hunted, fished, gathered crops. Then around 700 years ago, the missionaries figured that it would have been around 1300 CE. Those loose connections of communities came together to create a singular government, becoming the tribe as the missionaries found it.
That sounds normal.
Yeah, so far. But the tribe was threatened by a larger tribe to the west. Now, that's actually what prompted the communities to get together in the first place, even though they were still much smaller and were fearful that they could be, for lack of a better word, conquered by this neighboring tribe to the west. So, they reached out for more far-flung communities, inviting them to their tribe, basically trying to bolster their numbers. Here's where the weird starts, though. According to the elders, a woman and her three children showed up one day, and they said they'd come from the northeast, from a large community that was located just about where the town is today.
But you said there weren't any records of people living there before. You said that's why the settlers chose that land in the first place.
See, that's the thing. There isn't. Nothing other than this one interview by some missionaries. This is the only mention of it anywhere I can find, which is why I think this could be complete bullshit. I mean, there's never only one singular, deeply esoteric record of something like a large indigenous community that supposedly lived someplace for thousands of years.
Wait, hold on. Thousands of years?
Yeah. So the woman said her people had lived on that land where the town is today for thousands of years. That their ancestors trace their history back to the beginning of the world.
Is that normal? That sort of mythology about an indigenous group?
Yes and no. See, some groups, they do claims like that. Others say they descended from people who came from far away. It's honestly not a big deal.
Okay, so what is the big deal?
Okay, so this woman said she left, that she made this couple hundred mile journey on foot with three young children because her people were going to kill her kids.
So is that
normal? No, not at all. These people weren't. I fucking hate this word. Savages. They're nothing like most of the depictions you see in movies and shit. I mean, hell, most of their communities and tribes were more civilized than ours are today. So no, that's not normal at all.
So did she say why they were going to kill her kids?
Yeah. Okay, so that's where it gets to the second reason why I think this is probably completely fabricated. So she told the tribe that her community had, for lack of a better word, a king. I say chief, but that doesn't really mean the same thing as what she's talking about. So she's not talking about a political leader or someone that the people look up to and follow. She's talking about more of an absolute dictator. You do exactly what the king says or you die. The way she talks about the king is absolutely without precedent for indigenous groups on the continent at the time. It doesn't fit with anything that we know. The actual word could be used more closely translated to foundation. But in context, that word doesn't make sense. King is as close as I can get.
You translated foundation to mean king.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
So that's the weird thing. They have this foundation king thing.
Like, it's only weird for the area. I mean, there aren't any records of any of the tribes having a leader like that around that time, but that's not the weird part I'm talking about. It's only weird to me. I knew you wouldn't care. There's more, and this is where you might get more interested. So she doesn't describe the king, the foundation, in any significant detail, but she makes it clear that they don't look at it as a person. She talks about it like it's a thing. A massive, massive thing. Controls everything and everyone that lives where it is. She said the king stretched from an incredible distance, easily the size of the town, I mean, maybe a lot bigger. And it towered over everything, like, literally, towered. She said it stretched from below the earth up to the heavens.
The heavens?
Yeah. She said different parts of it were under the earth, but it also had all these parts that came up and kept going until you couldn't see the tops of them anymore. That it did that to remind the people of how powerful it was, that it was above them. And so naturally, the people did what anyone would do back then. They worshipped it as a god. They credited it with everything good and bad that happened to them. She said that it even showed them things. Showed them everything, whatever that means. Visions, I guess. Eventually, they didn't even seem to really draw a distinction between whatever the thing was and the actual land they were living on. Eventually, they seemed to consider them one and the same. Which is how the sacrificing started.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so she said their crops and hunts were good. They believed it was due to the thing's benevolence, to the thing being happy with them, and when things were bad, they believed that things... well, the thing was pissed at them. One year, a disease broke out in the group, and a number of the children died. They buried their bodies, as they always did, and the next spring, she said the crops that hadn't been planted grew all around the place where the kids had been buried. That's how they made the connection. The dead kids equaled happy gods, so they continued. And whenever they needed a good harvest, a particularly successful hunt, they sacrificed a child, and they got the good hunt. They got the good harvest, whether by luck, that's the word for it, or by something else. Their belief that this thing controlled their lives and that it wanted dead kids kept getting reinforced. But eventually a drought struck, and the crops died, and the animals went somewhere else for water. And the group got desperate. So they started killing all the children. Just a mass slaughter of their own kids. This woman said that she fled hundreds of miles on foot with her three children to spare their lives.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I know. And her story sounds ridiculous. I mean, even if she was real, because when the tribe heard about the community that she'd come from, they decided to go and try to convince them to join their new nation. The woman begged them not to do it, but they went anyway. A couple elders and several strong men with a lifetime of experience tracking and living in the wilds of the plains left on a journey to find the community. Now, according to what the elders told the missionaries, the party never returned. A second party went out a couple seasons later, looking for the original one, and they did eventually come back, although without the first group. Now, when they came back, they reported finding in the approximate area the woman had described, a gigantic, flattened piece of ground, covered completely in some kind of hard clay. From the description, it sounds like maybe adobe clay, stretching so far that you couldn't see where it stopped.
Adobe?
Yeah. So it's like a clay that...
I know what it is. Keep going.
So anyway, okay. So anyway, this is it. This is the crazy. The party that returned said that they saw these gigantic pillars or columns or of adobe sticking out of the ground in a pattern, some sort of regular arrangement. They said the pillars were massive, immeasurable, and they stretched to the heavens above.
No, that's...
Wait, there's more. They said they found people. Bodies, rather. They couldn't tell how many there were. If it was the first party or people who had been living on the land.
They couldn't recognize their own people?
No, not because of the way the bodies were. They described the bodies as being somehow impaled on the sides of the pillars. Several feet off the ground. All in the same position. Together and down, arms outstretched like they'd been crucified to the columns. That's not even the weird part.
The hell?
They said the faces on the bodies? They were missing. That where their faces should be, they were just dark black holes.
Like their faces had been dug, like they were just dug out of their heads?
No, not exactly. They specifically said they couldn't see what you'd normally see inside a head. That when they looked into the holes, they saw something else.
What?
Stars. The night sky. Fucking space. Few even said they saw constellations they recognized. And that the space they saw inside each person's, I guess you could say face, was different. Like it was a different perspective or view of space.
Jesus.
Yeah. See, I never heard anything like that before. The party said that they got lost looking into the faces, that they lost time, maybe days, staring into those maws where faces used to be. They were transfixed by them, thought they were a view into heaven, but they were also terrified. Once they were able to pull themselves away, they got out of there as fast as they could. They said as they were leaving, they saw a hole in the ground, large rectangular hole like a doorway on the floor. Steps leading down. None of them dared go in, they just kept going. And the few they could still speak reported what they'd seen. According to the elders, none of the second party were ever the same. Several took their own lives in the days that followed their return. The elders said that after that, they never sent another group in that direction.
Yeah, that sounds, that sounds really crazy.
I mean, at least that's what the missionary said in their notes about the interview.
Yeah, do you believe it?
Well, like I said, there's a lot of reasons not to, including that the scene described near the end doesn't even sound possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but do you, like, personally think it could be true?
I don't know. Man, history's filled with weird shit. All stuff that any rational person would swear couldn't possibly be true, except that it was. We know it was because we have several accounts from separate, reliable sources. We don't have that here. All we have is this weird shit that one questionable source citing another source that, well, honestly, may not even exist.
Yeah. It does sound impossible, doesn't it?
It sounds like a horror movie. Like some really messed up horror movie, not the kind of thing that ever happens. There's so much impossible stuff in it, man. I believe the woman, if she was real, fled because she was worried about her children. I don't know if I believe the community was sacrificing all its kids into some sort of, I don't know what. And I can't possibly believe that there was this place covered as far as you could see with adobe. And first of all, because that's impossible. Second of all, because that sort of building material wasn't really used by the Great Plains tribes. They were more into using wood and animal skin and that sort of thing. Adobe requires a certain soil composition, which wasn't available in the region. So the concept of having a massive amount of it covering an area is just impossible. Also, I mean, who would put it there? Why? Obviously the pillar column thing stretched to heaven and the holes in people's heads, what you could see into space, that's all insane. Maybe it's a metaphor. Maybe the party thought they saw something that they didn't see. Maybe what they really saw is lost in the translation. And maybe they made it all up. Maybe the missionaries made it all up. I don't know. There's so many ways that craziness could have ended up in the document that I read, but the only way I know it didn't get there is by any actually happening.
Yeah, so, but just out of curiosity, which church were the missionaries from? I mean, who kept copies of their interview notes?
The missionaries are from a church in St. Louis, Protestant, and originally their records were kept there, but they were eventually moved to a different church, which is actually how I found out. I mean, after I couldn't find out much of the interest in the normal places, I turned to some more unorthodox sources. Churches sometimes have interesting records from the town going all the way back to their founding. I pulled it up on Google Maps. I think it's in downtown. Same block as the old municipal building that you said your dad worked at. And it was perfect because the church is actually as old as the town itself. Both founded 1845. So it worked out that...
Okay, so all this information was in town. Why was it moved there?
I don't know. I don't know for sure, but it looks like Matthias Grunder was a regular at the church in St. Louis.
And wait, Matthias Grunder? My town's founder?
Yeah, that guy. So I guess he brought some documents from St. Louis Church when he went out and founded the town. He actually found the first church too, so he probably used the documents on top of that. And then he just kept them, you know, in the archive there.
Okay, so the guy who eventually settled on that land knew about the interview.
I mean, maybe. He took a lot of stuff with him. I don't know how much he knew himself, but he would have had access to it, yeah.
You don't think it played a role in choosing that location for settlement, do you?
Nah, like one crazy story? I mean, I doubt it. If anything, maybe the part about how there was like no native people in the area might have attracted him. Once he had his second kid, born blind, just like his first, he seemed to get tired of massacring indigenous populations, and I think he probably just wanted to get away from all that and try to find some peace. I mean, not that he deserved it. That's probably what he was seeking.
Well, there was more to the conversation after that, but it's not worth bringing up here. From that point on, it felt like I'd been punched in the stomach, like the wind had been knocked out of me. Everything he told me, everything that he thought sounded ridiculous and fake, sounded far too real to me. I've spent the last 10 months trying to convince myself that my childhood memories, even my memories from Thanksgiving last year, were something somehow wrong. That I've been incredibly mistaken and confused and made dreams into reality. That what I thought was real was just the symptoms of some mental illness, because that would honestly be preferable. I would prefer the truth be that I was sick, that my town had been quietly murdering children for decades, maybe more than a century. But what Jeremy had unearthed was proof that it wasn't, that I was completely, painfully, hopelessly sane. Jesus, that a century of child murder might only be a tiny sliver of the actual magnitude. My God. I mean, that church where this information was kept was as old as the town itself. Most of the founders were probably members. If they were following in the footsteps of that lost tribe, the interview document, it would have given them an instruction manual, a step-by-step how-to guide. That's how they knew. That's how they knew what to do, how to put the system in place that is evidently still functioning to this day. But why? Why settle there, knowing the price they would have to pay? Surely there were other places they could have chosen, other parcels of land that they could have worked for their needs. What exactly were their needs? I need to know more about the Matthias Grunders. There's definitely something there. I mean, there's questions. You'll have to wait, because for now, I have to deal with something much more personal, more painful. Everything I thought I remembered did actually happen. Tiffany Carter was actually missing, probably dead. And speaking of which, when I was 9 and the columns appeared, 6 children disappeared before the columns receded. The woman's story from the interview seemed to cite several examples of killing multiple children to satisfy whatever the hell that thing is. So was this time different? Was only one child necessary, or is Tiffany just the only victim whose name somehow escaped my town's event horizon? How many children did I endanger that night? Under the old municipal building. I don't think I can sleep. This has been a lot for me. You know, it's hard to revisit conversation, to transcribe it, to go through the horror of realizing how massive this thing is that I found myself involved in this. And honestly, it took me a couple days to get it down, written out. In that time, something really strange happened. I received a package this afternoon, no return address, small, a little bigger than a brick, heavy as well. I opened it to find a single piece of concrete, obviously broken off of some larger structure, and on it, in a perfect type, as though the concrete was poured into a mold to cast it, there were the words, "I dreamed of you." I have no idea what it means. Who would send it? I searched the tracking number of the shipping label. The origin came from my hometown. I have no idea what it means, but I'm scared. I'm really scared. Because it seemed like, while I've been looking into this whole thing, whatever it is, someone or something has been looking back at me.